each and every Sunday, 3 p.m. on the East Coast, 6 p.m. on the West, 5 Central, and 4 Mountain Time. Hey, we've got a power pack show here for you tonight. See my panel there. I see Mad Mike. Mike Ward, how are you, buddy?
I am wonderful. How's everyone? Great to see you all.
Terrific, terrific, terrific. Ann Wooten Taylor. Hey, Ann. Your mic is on mute.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. I didn't want to make any noise while the music was playing. But hey, everybody, how you doing?
Oh, we're doing good. Oh, wow, 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 wow. And Dr. Reverend Rudolph Demery.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Hear you just fine. Hear you just fine. And our special guest tonight, Mr. Earl Mitchell. Mr. Mitchell, how are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful. Thankfully that I got in and kind of figured it out.
Okay, very good, very good. Yeah, and meet Mike Ward. Mike is the co-host on the Mad Mike and Wild Will Coast to Coast radio show coming to you every Thursday, folks. If you're missing Mad Mike and Wild Will, you're missing a treat. We play a bunch of music. Well, practically all genres of music. As long as it's clean and healthy, we'll play it. We have just a great time on that broadcast. You guys, you can check it out each and every Thursday, 8:15 p.m. right here on the East, 5:15 on the West, and 7:15 Central Time. Ann Wooten Taylor, Mr. Mitchell, you know Ann very well. She was on, was it the Boomerang Radio Show? No, he was on Teens Talk Truth. Is that correct?
Stop it. Stop. You know you post him for the Boomerang. Stop.
Yeah, I did.
How are you, Mr. Mitchell? It's good to see you again and talk to you again.
Indeed. It's good to be right. seen.
Yeah, Mr. Mitchell, excuse Ann, because she has a habit of acting up sometimes, you know, but
as
that's okay.
As you can see, William is already getting started.
Already, and
I know it's because Big Sister's not here yet that you feel like you can get away with picking on me, but that's all right.
No, that's okay. I don't mind having both of you because both of you need a talking to sometime. And anyway, Dr. Reverend Rudolph Demery, the pastor of the Mentone Congregational Church in Mentone, California. Yes, absolutely. And hopefully Dr. Sims will be joining us shortly. So today we have a very interesting program today, and we're going to do it a little bit differently. Normally we do a roundtable discussion, and we can get into some of that a little bit later on. But I invited Mr. Mitchell on for a reason. I heard him on the Teens Talk Truth radio show, and it was fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating. And I said, wow, got to have this gentleman on one of our platforms, preferably the Boomerang. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Mr. Mitchell, and then I'd like for the panel to ask Mr. Mitchell some questions. Okay. I was talking to Mr. Mitchell yesterday. Was it yesterday, the day before? And I said, I was reading your bio, and it reads like a short novel. I said, good grief. Earl C. Mitchell III is an accomplished mentor and scholar of African American studies with deep experience in the development of collegiate level mentorship programs that promote cultural identity and understanding. Mr. Mitchell was born in the Bronx, in right there in New York City. He receives his elementary through high school education in New York, and later relocated to Atlanta, Georgia, where he completed his Bachelor of Arts degree from Morehouse College. He has also completed a master's program in African American studies at Clark Atlanta University. He and his family live in New York, in the New York area, and enjoy traveling. Mr. Mitchell has traveled across the globe and documented his findings on African and African American history. His trips throughout Africa, Europe, the Americas, and the Caribbean islands have served as a backup for his research. It is Mr. Mitchell's estimation that knowledge of self leads to greater self-awareness. When predicated upon a true understanding of one's culture, this knowledge of self takes its maxim from the ancient temples of Egypt. In mentoring young students, Mr. Mitchell has found a correlation between knowledge gained about one's culture and the direct result in it has on self-esteem. In addition, this cultural understanding of self eradicates most, if not all, questions of where young African Americans see themselves from a worldview. Mr. Mitchell's love of history combined with his understanding of what the world now calls new media and a flair for education have put him in a unique position to share history and his research with the world. Currently, Mr. Mitchell's company is Third Eye Media. Okay, is selling books and sharing cultural thought processes with the world. The information age has opened new vistas to communicate with the world, and Third Eye Media is on the vanguard. This opportunity being seized to make sure that proper knowledge is exchanged based on first-hand accounts. His various travels and studies have put Mr. Mitchell and Third Eye Media in a position to move cultural thought processes further and allow the unknown to become known. As information has been gathered by Mr. Mitchell, books have been and will be created to capture the journey of Africans and African Americans. The first of these books published by Third Eye Media is A Historical Look at Kappa Alpha Psi, An Interpretation of Unseen Ritualistic Truth and History, 2004. This book sheds light on this fraternity and its deeper impact on those members. The second book, published in 2013, based on his thesis, Understanding Washington, D.C., Through a Thorough and Comedic Lens, is entitled Egyptian Origins of Washington, D.C. I'd like to know more about that. Volume 1, African Guards in America's Capital. This book follows the founding of America, which with its true foundation laid over unknown facts about Africans who would later be called African Americans. In January of 2020, the second installment of research on Kappa Alpha Phi was shared. This book is entitled The Mysteries of Kappa Alpha Psi, Volume 1, Identity, Truth, and Location of Kappa Lands. In June of 2023, Volumes 2 and 3 of Egyptian Origins of Washington, D.C. will deliver will delve deeper in the sacred feminine and, planispheres of ancient Africa as found in America's capital. In the later part of 2023, the book entitled Totem, The Sorority and Fraternal Call to Cultural Unity and Remembrance will be released. This book and lecture chronicle the true cultural thought patterns that was created, that created fraternities and sororities and the impact the overall fraternal structure can have on society. Boy, that's a mouthful. That's a lot. There's a lot more.
Mr. Mitchell, I will read your intro because I know William just butchered it. I'm so sorry. See. I'll do it next time. It's my fault.
I tell you what, you can pick up where I left off.
That's okay.
William. No, it's not. It's not okay. I understand. I'm saying. No.
So, in other words, he is very accomplished and he's awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
I think I said that. So, but anyway, today we're going to talk about, it's two things I really want to talk about, and then we'll get into some others, I'm sure of it. But, you know, this thing that we hear about all the time, and some people making it out to be a bad thing, which I don't think, and that's the woke philosophy, all right? And I want Mr. Mitchell, and we're also going to talk about critical race theory. And so to get rid of all of these boogeyman in the room conversations that we have on these subjects. Okay. I want Mr. Mitchell to break it down. Now, woke, I saw a brief, description of that, and that is conscious of injustice in society. So I don't see anything wrong with that. And let's talk about philosophy a little bit. Philosophy from Greek, by the way of Latin, is that, Dr. Demery, is that, philosophia, love of wisdom, the rational, abstract, and methodical consideration.
I think that's close. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, of reality as a whole or fundamental dimensions of human existence and experience. Okay, Mr. Mitchell. Let's just jump right into it. And panel, I'd like for you guys to ask Mr. Mitchell a question. Okay, we're going to do this, you know, like different from what we normally do. But will you please break down what is this woke philosophy, and why are so many of people out here use that term as a bad word, or they're trying to vilify that word or make it sound like it's something nefarious? Can you kind of break it down for us so we get a better understanding?
Sure, I can definitely give some insight to that. First and foremost, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to share your thoughts on the idea of being woke, as well as what critical race theory is, and also what critical race theory is not. My background, if you will, in terms of understanding particular terms comes from not only a scholastic perspective, but also just being a human being, really recognizing how critical race theory is being demonized, how the idea of woke or wokeism or woke philosophy is really a disingenuous manner of disrespecting a colloquialism that actually comes about of the African-American. So with that being said, let me woke. So this idea of woke philosophy and the fact that you have many states woke is really a disrespectful punch, if you will, in terms of what African-Americans would simply call being aware of what's happening in society. One of the things that we used to say many years ago was, you know, if we left the conversation, would be they woke. And this is something, you know, it's a colloquialism that we had used for many, many years. And, you know, a benign type of a conversation, a benign type of, you know, score for engagement, if you will. But it has taken on an idea of its own that doesn't have the same type of respect or even understanding that it's what gender to be. So in that particular instance, woke, or, you know, talk about, you know, woke community. It's just saying it's not, but it's an affront, if you will, to people of African descent, but it's also an affront for everyone who ought to be aware of the different things that are going on in society. Negative. Unfortunately, the.
Oh, we're missing something. Are you breaking up a little bit, Mr. Mitchell?
Okay, hang on. Can you hear me now?
Okay. No, we missed a few words, and we want to hear every word that you have to say. Yeah.
Yes. So I was sharing that the different states that would be going after woke, like the case in point, Florida, you know, right now, so the woke law, if you will, some type of law that they're in the process of passing that doesn't want a certain idea expressed. Unfortunately, growing that idea of critical race theory. And with critical race theory, it's been around for quite some time. This is not also a class at graduate school. It's not anything that's well. But critical race theory as an understanding gives a lens through which to understand how society, specifically America, has been extremely negative, if you will. And the idea of critical race theory has been utilized to recognize the institutionalized aspect of racism that has unfortunately kept this country handicapped and has not really opened up opportunities across the board. So there are very specific reasons as to why critical race theory is not only needed, but needs to be embraced by all folks, not just people of African descent, but everybody of every ethnicity in this country.
Mr. Mitchell, I hate to interrupt you. I'm going to ask that you log out and log and come back in because you're breaking up a lot.
And okay. I think what's happening is he's got a lot of background noise, and what's happening is popping in and out because his microphone is trying to cancel part of what he's saying.
Okay, so let me ask. Is this better now?
Yeah, I think if you stay close to your mic, it might solve the problem. I'm not sure.
Okay. If this is a little bit better, let me know.
That's definitely better.
Okay,
yes.
We'll do it like this. In terms of, again, what critical race theory is, it gives a lens through which to understand many of the inequalities that have taken place in American society. It's not like this, you know, boogeyman, if you will, that's trying to eradicate America or give America a bad name. But what it does do is take a deep dive into what are the types of institutions that have been affected by racism and how we can actually understand it, and uproot that negativity so that literally everyone in this country can actually engage and participate in the fullness of what the idea of America is supposed to be. So that's what critical race theory is, you know, in a nutshell, if you will. And what's interesting, I believe it was Richard Delgado and Gene Stefanik who actually were part of the book that was written, or one of the books, one of the original books that were written. And there were various individuals who engaged in the creation of this particular theory. It wasn't just people of African descent. You know, you had European Americans. I mean, you had a little bit of everyone across the board. So again, when you have many of the political leaders who are looking at this particular aspect of critical race theory and trying to demonize it and make it as if it's this kind of monster, it really is not. What critical race theory does is uproot and really puts a light or shines a light on those things that need to be made proper that have not been proper and correct based upon institutionalized racism. Bottom line in the story. And then understanding what woke is in the conscious community, you have individuals that understood that certain things were going on in society that were not right and proper. And for one to be aware or for one to be woke was most important so that you would not get caught out there, so to speak, in terms of the inequalities that could potentially lead to one's downfall. So, you know, specifically for African Americans, when you talk about moving beyond traps and snares and being able to move forward, it has not come without struggle. And a lot of that struggle has been put in front of this segment of society so that there would be no equality. And what critical race theory does is simply say, hey, this is what has taken place. These are the institutions that have been affected by issues of racism, and this is the manner and place and space in which we need to go about and attack it and make it fair across the board for everyone. So that's my opening statement in terms of what critical race theory, as well as what the idea of woke and this whole thing about woke philosophy is all about.
Yes. Well, you know, we're going to go around the panel and see if the panelists have questions. Dr. Sims is trying to get in. Hopefully she can connect. But if I understand correctly, this boogeyman in the room, critical race theory, which it's not, it's not even being taught in elementary schools. It's a part of a college curriculum. Is that correct?
Yeah. You would not see the idea, a book. There's nothing that engages critical race theory between K through 12. You may get critical race theory, at least an introduction, if you will, at the collegiate level and definitively at the graduate level. But again, that's only going to be if you're taking certain types of subjects. So if you're taking African or African-American history, feminine studies and so forth, you might find critical race theory inserted into those particular subject matters. But again, in terms of critical race theory being taught between K through 12, number one, that's not being done. And number two, it's really a high level understanding of what this society has been and what the society has become. But it also speaks to what the society hopes to become, which is fair and equitable across the board.
You know, when I opened, I said something about woke, and we talk about this woke philosophy. And to me, if you look at it, I think we all should be woke. I had a conversation with a pastor friend of mine, and we got on the subject of being woke. He said, well, we should all want to be woke. We should all want to know what's going on. And I gave a brief definition, and you gave a more extensive definition of it, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more. But basically, it's just conscious of injustice in society. You're being conscious of what's going on. And this country is advertised itself as being a country of laws, a country of justice. So why would we not want to recognize when injustices occur?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Just very briefly. So when you talk about why would the country not want to recognize where injustices happen to be? So now you're talking about a continued employment of inequality across the board. So when you start talking about particular types of truths in terms of what took place, when, where, how, who the perpetrators were and what have you, there seems to be a particular level of guilt that many people might feel based upon what actually happened, based upon the idea of America coming up out of how it was actually created, which, of course, slavery was always a part of this institution or of this idea of America, because prior to America being founded, you had the colonies, and in the colonies you did have enslaved, you had slavery. And that's just the truth of it all. And I think when you start to understand how this country had, you know, how it's come to what it is, you cannot dismiss that. you cannot eradicate the conversations that need to be had that talks about the elevation and the evolution of what the society has actually become. Now, are we still in the 1600s? No. Do we still have definitive issues that need to be corrected? Definitely. And I think what critical race theory actually does is give a lens through which to understand how these ideas and how this inequality has come, how it has actually maintained itself, but then also what are the things to do that can actually eradicate a lot of that inequality. And of course, when we start talking about woke, if you think about enslaved Africans between 16, 17, and the 1800s in the United States of America, they had to be woke on so many different layers, on so many different levels, I should say, mentally, physically, spiritually. The manner in which one expressed him or herself in terms of the movement of one's eyes or the movement of one's body, you had to be aware. And in that instance, while the idea of woke might not have been around then, they definitely had to be woke. Mm-hmm. Because they were all, you know, traps and snares that one had to try to maneuver oneself out of just to get to some level of positive engagement, if there was any positive engagement. And us having this conversation in 2023 and recognizing what it's taken for this panel to even come together, there's a lot that has to be discussed, and we cannot overlook that. This is an opportunity for this country to actually stand up, not stand down, and to really look at its blemishes, if you will, and be very honest about what needs to be done to cleanse itself. And at the end of the day, when you look at, again, I got to put, you know, deal with Florida, if you will. When you look at what's being done down in Florida with these particular laws that are being passed, it's really sad. And it speaks to the mindset, and it speaks to the lack of understanding that is being engendered into government now. So now you're talking about these ideas being written into state law that doesn't allow certain ideas to be shared, of which much of that deals with African and African-American history. And if we're going to speak, then we must speak with truth. We must speak with honor, and we must speak in a manner that allows those who come behind us to know the truth so that they don't make the same mistakes that have happened in the past. Plain and simple. So, you know, as I said, and when I signed off on the last time I had a chance to engage you, and stay woke, everybody.
Amen.
That's right. Let's go around the panel now. And, hey, welcome, Dr. Sims. I hope you're feeling better.
Hi. Yeah, a lot going on.
Okay, I understand. So let's go around the room and then we'll go to Mike and then Dr. Demery, Dr. Sims. And, what questions do you have for, Mr. Mitchell?
Well, Mr. Mitchell, thank you again for gracing us with your presence. You know how much I hold you in high esteem. I'm just flabbergasted in a lot of ways by how we have this colloquialism, as you stated earlier, that has been around for so many years that all of a sudden has been catapulted to the forefront of a political discourse that's, you know, being used in a very real way to divide the country. And it's amazing to me how you've got other colloquialisms that we've used that have become embedded or ingrained in part of American culture, but it hasn't taken root in this particular way. I mean, there are lots of different things that Black people, you know, terms that Black people coined that are part of the mainstream of the way that we speak now. For instance, there are a lot of people who say stuff like, I don't know if you guys heard it, like booty call and, you know, that type of stuff. These are terms that are that came up in African-American culture. But they don't have this same negative connotation attached to them. Why is it, in your opinion, such a difference when it comes to just saying stay woke?
I think that's a great question, and I wish I could answer that. I do believe, in terms of what you see on the news and what have you, it's an idea that had to be seized upon to create some type of boogeyman to eradicate a lot of the strides and a lot of the information that's actually being shared now. Through a lot of different research, if you will, many states are engaging in including various aspects of African-American studies that had not been included before. And when you think about how these different ideas, specifically African-American studies, that it took a long time for that to even be embraced and to become part of what you would see at the collegiate and even at the graduate level. A lot of people fought for a very, very long time, going back to the late 60s and, of course, the early 70s. So mm-hmm. with that, there's information, there's opportunity, there's a correction, if you will, of history that in many instances has taken place, because that voice, the African-American voice, was not at the table from a scholastic perspective. So recognizing that and looking at many of the strides that African-Americans have made, let's say within the last just 20 years, I mean, we've had an African-American president. Nobody ever saw that coming, you know, right. Barack Obama.
Amen.
But I think with what was ever happening, whatever this fear, there was some type of fear. Mm-hmm. And I think critical race theory was simply seized upon as an open scapegoat. And interestingly enough, it's not as if it was some other theory that was seized upon within the African-American community, but critical race theory in particular was mm-hmm. seized upon. And then, of course, the idea of woke. So it's almost as if it's kind of like a double gut punch. It's the hit at the scholastic level, but then it's also a very, very dismissive manner in terms of saying this whole woke philosophy or the woke people or the woke brigade and so forth. Mm-hmm. These are ideas that are used to limit the respectability that African Americans have actually gained over the years. It's dismissive, it's disrespectful, but then the other piece is from an educational platform, it eradicates or it is trying to eradicate certain truths, particularly within history, from being shared. So how do you, let's say, engage, you know, the civil rights movement? Like, wait, how is that dealt with? How do you deal with the idea of slavery? Do you go from, well, slavery was something where, you know, there were good places for the enslaved people to live and it wasn't that bad? Or do you deal with the harsh reality that black bodies were taken through what's called the Ma'afa, or more commonly called the transatlantic slave trade, mm-hmm. and that you had individuals who were courted and lynched and all types of stuff that were done that are just simply ungodly? Mm-hmm. And that's a reality. And of course, we understand what that was. We recognize where we are. And this is a society that's actually in constant change. It's moving in a good way. Mm-hmm. But I think when you have individuals, particularly at the highest levels of power within different states from a political perspective, disrespecting and dismissing the contribution or trying to shut down the history. And again, African-American history is part of American history.
Yes. Amen.
And you cannot dismiss that, and you cannot be disrespectful, because again, for the young folks who are coming behind us, there has to be a truth so that they don't make the same mistakes that we've had in the past.
Mm-hmm.
This is why history is needed. This is why we need definitive individuals, whether they have master's degrees, PhDs, to really be honest, to do the research, and whatever it is that they find, good, bad, or indifferent, bring that to the masses. So mm-hmm. again, this disrespect and this dismissive attitude of critical race theory is really about pushing back
mm-hmm.
these different strides that have been made. And to be quite honest with you, it is also a red herring. Because mm-hmm. if we're all focusing on critical race theory, if we're worrying about this whole woke mm-hmm. philosophy, then the question really becomes, what is the issue that's really being taken, that's taking place that we're not watching, that's mm-hmm. in the process of being dug up and dealt with? So mm-hmm. that's just, you know, a perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I have more questions, but I'm going to go to Mike. Mike, what questions do you have for Mr. Mitchell?
Well, I'm very pleased to hear him say that we're moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. I was born in 1956, so that makes me old. You don't have to do the math. I've seen in my lifetime, I've seen an improvement in racial equality. Mm-hmm. And I've seen an improvement in people's lives. Is it all fair? Is it all roses and sunshine and unicorns? No, it's not. I'm going to go a little wider scope. I'm going to go worldwide and not just the U.S. because there's unfairness that exists throughout the world. Mm-hmm. We don't all start at the starting line of the race. Some people start yards back and therefore they have to work so much harder to get where they want and need to be. So I'm very pleased to hear you say that we're moving in a good way. And I firmly believe that sunlight is a great disinfectant. So expose this to everyone. Let everyone see let them see the dirt. I think that's good. We all need to see that dirt, because if we do the ostrich routine and we put our heads in the sand, we go, oh, well, you know, I don't see it, so therefore it doesn't exist. Well, mm-hmm. you're doing yourself and you're doing this world and you're doing humanity a disservice. So there's my statement. My question, Mr. Mitchell, thank you again for being here. God, your credentials are amazing. I just learned to tie my shoe yesterday. you mentioned, or I think William mentioned, cultural unity. How would you go about, and I'm going to maybe hold you to one or two ideas here. What top one or two things would you do to push forth more cultural unity, stuff that we're not currently doing, perhaps, maybe something that's out of the box a little bit? What's your thoughts on that? Maybe your top two or top three, whatever you're comfortable with.
Your mic is muted. Mr. Mitchell? Unmute your mic.
That's right. Yeah, the mic was muted. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
Thank you very much for the question, and thank you for your kind words. When you start looking at, let's say, the one or two things in reference to cultural unity, there are a few things that I do. So I operate within not just the African-American community, but I'm looking at the overall understanding of what, let's say, America is and what the contribution America is. So when you look at the cultural contribution, let's say, to America and the cultural contribution from an African-American perspective. So I'm going to use my book as an example. So understanding Washington, D.C., through an Egyptian lens, if you will, Egyptian origins of Washington, D.C. is the book that's, you know, that's publicly written. And the subtitle is called African Gods in America's Capital. So when you start talking about this idea of a cultural unity, that thesis dealt with, and the book deals with, the idea that there are African gods literally etched in the stone of our nation's capital. And that is a proven fact. It is something that was embraced by the Academy. And when you look at it, every time you look at it is there from a cartographic perspective. When you look at it from a Google Earth perspective, and when you understand the papyri that were at, when I say papyri, these are the ancient Egyptian writings, if you will, that are actually imbued into America's capital. And it's something that had not been seen before. So there's a particular type of cultural unity from an African perspective that through Benjamin Banneker, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, and many others, that actually put this into and onto the actual street layout of America's capital. It is there. So you're not only looking at what the contribution of ancient Africans, but you're looking at African Americans, because African Americans built the White House, built the Capitol, and many other aspects, if you will. So that's that cultural unity within that perspective. But now from a broader understanding, when you start looking at America, this is also a contribution that all ethnicities need to know. And there is a cultural unity because all ethnicities in this country have contributed something to make this country what it is. So in the sense of how do we understand this? How do we move closer together? How do we get this cultural unity, if you will? It's about knowing those things that we can't see. It's about doing the research and doing the hard work that allows us to say, well, wait a minute. We haven't seen this before. Can we prove it? Is it provable? Okay, now it's been substantiated. This is something that needs to be discussed. When you look at, let's say, critical race theory and wondering, let's say, within the academy, how come certain things are happening? How come certain levels of knowledge and wisdom and understanding isn't being etched, you know, in stone for individuals to learn from, if you will? Critical race theory looks at that and says, this is the root, this is the reason, and this is the why. With the research that I've done specifically on Washington, D.C., it says there are greater contributions that Africans, African Americans, and what that means to the totality of a cultural unity in America. And these are the things that unfortunately have like kept us away from one another as opposed to recognizing what those contributions have been. It is one thing to speak about Dr. King, Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, Drusilla Dungey Houston, Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth. I mean, the litany of individuals who have given, you know, great, you know, import to this country. But to actually see that these ancient African ideas are part of a cultural unity that we now call America, that's something major. This is something that everyone is supposed to know. We all need to be able to participate in. Now, with that being said, the idea that's being shared could potentially be attacked as being, you know, this is part of the woke group or the woke philosophy, and it can be dismissed. When in two instances, it's not just dealing with what African Americans have extended to this country, but it's also dealing with the very foundation upon which this country was built, which is that federal triangle upon which the White House, the United States Capitol, George Washington Circle, many different edifices, if you will, that set the foundation for the movement of this country. And to be able to recognize, again, the contribution from various ethnicities. So whether you're looking at the Art Bijou type of architecture that you see in terms of the different buildings and the architecture, if you will, and then even in the manner in which the streets are even put together. This is important. It shows a cultural contribution where many have extended their greatness. So again, the whole idea of e pluribus unum, out of many one, it really makes sense, but everyone has not been able to be shown that contribution. It hasn't been able to be shown in terms of what these various ethnicities have extended, and definitely from an African-American perspective, and definitely not at that early, not that early of a time in America. No one knew that there were these ancient Egyptian ideas that were in Washington, D.C. I mean, we've talked about it, we've seen it, but it wasn't specific. We have the Washington Monument, right? The George Washington Monument. That is an obelisk, but that is a purely ancient African symbol, which was commonly called in Africa a tekken. So in understanding that, and there's so much more to understand, but in understanding these different ideas, these different symbols and where they come from, this brings an understanding and a respect across the board, as opposed to it, when I say it, as opposed to the contribution of these ancient, you know, African and African-American ideas, it brings these ideas to the forefront. And what's happening now, particularly with the demonization of the word critical race theory, or the disrespect of the word woke, we all miss it, and we're not able to grow. And that's all of us, regardless of ethnicity in this country.
Wow. Dr. Demery?
Well, I think...
Go on, Mike.
Real quick, I'm sorry. I think what's happening is there's two different, there's probably more than two, but there's two different definitions to woke. In its purest form, the way you're demonstrating it is to be awake, to be aware of what's going on, to see everything in its entirety, all of it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Unfortunately, I think some people have bastardized that term, and they're using it to divide us and separate us and conquer us. And that's my fear, is that people that aren't pure of heart and pure of head and pure of spirit will use that against their brother, us. And that's my fear with the whole woke thing. So, and please comment.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, when you start looking at the whole idea of divide and conquer, and not really utilizing words to empower, but to actually divide. I mean, words can either liberate or words can incarcerate, depending upon who's using them. And unfortunately, you're talking about what I like to call verbal gymnastics, which takes a word or a term and it really creates something that wasn't even there in the first place. And this is what we're witnessing in this very moment. And it's extremely unfortunate. And again, what that does, for those of us who have a level of understanding, we can discern what's taking place. But my fear is, what happens to these children? What is it that they're being extended in terms of not really recognizing what these words mean or these particular concepts? And unfortunately, particularly through the educational system, they will be devoid and potentially deprived of really knowing certain truths. So to your point, and I do have to agree with that in terms of how this particular word woke is being utilized. And again, unfortunately, it is a tool that is being used to divide, to conquer, and to, in many instances, and this is the most dangerous, to silence. You're talking about silencing truth. You're talking about silencing history. Again, when you look at the enslavement of African people in what is now called America, in the books, it tells you some of the hideous things that have taken place. But when you have a rewriting of that history, if it is not done honestly, we miss the truth so that we can actually become better. And that is extremely problematic. And that's across the board, and that affects everyone in this country. You know, so those are my thoughts, and hopefully I've answered the question.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell.
Okay.
William?
Dr. Demery, what question?
I would say, sir, that I am a source critic, and that's the way I was trained. So I believe in going back to the source and the process of things. You're familiar with the 1619 Project.
And I am.
People on the panel are. Well, when you do the antithesis of that process, and I actually was on a tour once when I was in Sierra Leone, and I got asked to leave because I was criticizing the process by which slavery was started. And depending on which scholar you talk about, upwards of 80% of the slaves were put in slavery by Africans. Mm-hmm. And there was even black folks who had slaves. So my question to you is, and I try to get them, and most Africans I talk to take responsibility for what they did that started the whole process of slavery, that they will not take responsibility for. And that's part of this whole process of being woke and understanding the truth. Because to me, I mean, I'm reducing it to its lowest common denominator, being a source critic of biblical studies. And that means when you reduce everything down to its lowest common denominator, there's an answer. And the process is that 80% or right around that point, slaves were put into slavery by Africans. And the Africans need to take responsibility part and parcel for what they did. And yes, we can blame this and we can blame that, but part of the diaspora, if you can say that, the slavery diaspora was based upon the fact that Africans put us into slavery. So that's my, I know I said a whole lot, but that's my question slash comment to you.
I'm definitely familiar with the 1619 project. I was very pleased with what, how it came out, how it was actually expressed and what was shared. Your point about 80% of Africans enslaving other Africans, definitely that did happen. But I would say this, when you start looking at the idea of chattel slavery, there's something that is extremely different when you start looking at what Europeans did versus what many Africans did. Mm-hmm. So you did have slavery, and again, we've had slavery throughout human history. But when you start looking at the specificity in terms of what actually took place, what was done, there's a difference. So when you had Africans who, let's say, enslaved other Africans, their religion was not taken from them. They might have been incarcerated or put in slavery as we understand it to be, but their movement, if you will, was a little bit different. And it was not the idea of chattel slavery that was extended from a European. I think that is a particular level of distinction that has to be made. Not saying that it was right or proper for that to be done, but when you start looking at the level of specificity in terms of what that difference was, we do have to look at it from that perspective. When you understand, and again, not saying you in particular, but when you understand what was taking place from a political and from a war perspective, you had individuals in Africa that were being set upon by Europeans, and unfortunately Africans were selling other Africans into slavery, and part of that was for personal survival. Not saying that was correct. So again, as certain brothers of different tribes are being sold, they too, after they couldn't provide any more enslaved Africans, they too were enslaved themselves. So, and again, this is not to say that was correct or proper, but when we look at what was done to Africans in particular, it's very different. Chattel slavery versus the type of enslavement that was taking place on the continent of Africa is a little bit different. It was not the same.
Okay. Dr. Sims?
Hi, everybody. Nice to see you, Mr. Mitch. I've heard a little bit about you. I was listening to everyone, and the critical race theory is really troubling to me. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is because I'm very observant of what's going on when you say stay woke. I've used that terminology. In other words, wake up, okay, period, to reality. Because if people don't wake up to reality, it doesn't give them the knowledge and power that they need to move from a negative place to a positive place. And that's my theory on that. And when I say people become awakened, I'll use that terminology, when they become awoke, like we can say that, I tell them knowledge is power. And it also lets you know your significance, because I believe critical race theory and what has happened, I believe that what's happening, the people who are in control of politics, I don't know if you all covered this, in control of politics and in that, I stay in the White House, okay, because they need to be cleaned up. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. But the thing is this, is that they're losing control of their political arena when people are awake. I believe that, because people now are becoming so knowledgeable of the things that have transpired in our history that when they learn what has transpired, it's going to be hard to captivate them again mentally, because mentally you gain that power. And I believe that's why they don't want our children to learn this. And what do you think about this? They don't want it taught in our schools. And I know you were talking about that. They don't want it talked about in our colleges, but yet you have children indoctrinated with these these heinous demonic appetites of some, teaching them gender identification and all these things, but yet they don't want them to learn their history. And I'll say this, and I'll give it back to you, Dr. Mitchell, is it? I'll give it Professor Mitchell. Okay, I always put titles on folks. Okay, but anyway, I heard a little Caucasian girl, and she said it so profound. She says, you know, she said, it's wrong the way they did my sister. And she's just a young girl, because she learned some history, and that brought a negative atmosphere with her parents, that she's learning about Black history. And she said that what they did to the Africans was uncalled for. They didn't have to hurt them that way. They didn't have to do this. They didn't have to do that. And they had it on the news, and she was just really just as innocent talking about what she learned and how those who are losing their arena to maintain social, political, and economic inequality, should I say, between white and non-whites. And it's just not us these days, folks. It's all other kind of genders. And I heard you say, Mike said, we're moving forward. But listen, it's not moving fast enough. So what do you say about children who are being taught round the way of the rewritten history, should I say, that is not as defined as what we've actually been through? Even our children suffered at the hands of some of our sick predecessors. What do you have to say about that?
I have to say that, unfortunately or fortunately, our children need to know the truth. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I think about, and I'm going to use myself as an example. As a young Black man growing up in this country, my father had to have some conversations with me. And I'm from the Bronx. Mm-hmm. Born in the Bronx, moved to Mount Vernon. But my parents had to have particular conversations with me about how I maneuvered through this society. Mm-hmm. And as a child, not necessarily really understanding what that meant. And really, it meant life or death. But mm-hmm. yet the conversations had to be had so that I could maneuver to the best way or the best way that I could. And they hoped that I would be able to make it home. Now, mm-hmm. that's just a very basic conversation that was had with me. When you juxtapose that to the type of information that children who let's say my age, when I was in elementary school, if my parents are telling me, hey, this is how you need to maneuver, this is how you need to speak to police and so forth. The fact that young children, regardless of ethnicity in this country, are learning this information is extremely important because it does a few things. Number one, it gives proper history. Number mm-hmm. two, it gives proper understanding as to what that history was and how and where and how we got to this particular space. And then number three, it allows a particular type of honesty so that we can, okay, we get what's happened, but we are moving forward. And as you said, we're not moving fast enough. So if a young African-American man or a young African-American woman has to be told how to survive before they're turning 13 and 14 mm-hmm. years old, mm-hmm. then for other children in this country, regardless of their background, reading a book about the truth is not that hard. Mm-hmm. Reading a book about what's taking place, it shouldn't be one of these things where it's like, oh my gosh, you know, you're going to change the way that, we're thinking or how we're seeing. I believe based upon what you had said a little earlier as well about the power dynamic and the maintenance of control, if you will, which is, of course, through information, that is part and parcel of the issue. So when we look at, for instance, and I'm going a little bit left here, when you start looking at the demographics of this country, in the next 4 years, you're looking at a greater Black and brown population. And when you look at the greater Black and brown population, when you look at the politics and the gerrymandering, you're looking at individuals in power who, in many instances, are trying to control large populations in spaces where they're not going to have the majority moving forward. So it's this whole unfortunate recognition of a movement and of a shift in a society that is changing literally, as I would say, at breakneck speed. And what I mean by that is this. You have a browning of America. That is what's taking place. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at the demonization of critical race theory, if you're looking at, you know, taking pot shots at the idea of being woke and what have you, that's trying to stem the mm-hmm. movement that's taking place in terms of the change that's happening in society. But if we all respected each other and engaged one another properly, we wouldn't be having these conversations. Telling mm-hmm. the truth wouldn't be a big issue, right. you know, but these kids, they need to know the truth. They need to understand how we've gotten from A to Z, and it has to be a particular manner of how it's shared. And when I say a particular manner, it has to be truthful. You can't just say, you know, oh, Rosa Parks didn't want to get up and, you know, she was having a rough day or whatever. No, you have to understand the context exactly. in which why that conversation was even being had, because then if you don't do that, the truth is lost. Mm-hmm. And we cannot lose that. And no society, regardless of where it is on earth, can do that. We're mm-hmm. human beings. We need to understand how we got to this particular space and how to get to that better space if it actually exists. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I wasn't too long with that, but I appreciate what you shared.
Oh, no question about it. Mr. Mitchell, I'm looking at, I'm really upset with the political climate in this country. And I tell you why, because I think that these people, if you talk about welfare, I think they are overpaid. I talk about our Congress and our Senate, the entire is overpaid welfare recipients. I mean, this is what I'm looking at, because you look at it. I'm serious about this. And they talk about things like critical race theory. They're talking about things like this woke philosophy instead of doing the jobs that they were elected for. And right. My question to you is, do you see this as a political ploy when they start talking about, man, we got a budget that needs to be passed. Okay, there's gun violence. I mean, there's violence all over this country. I mean, we talk about inflation, so many different things, yet they want to spend their time talking about woke philosophy and critical race theories. And to sort of, and to me, I look at this as a distraction away from them not doing the jobs that they were elected to do. I'd like to have your take on that.
Well, you know, I'm not a politician, because I think I just simply speak the truth. I don't think about it. but when you, that's a very serious question, though. When you start talking about, is there this whole bait and switch, or yeah. when you're looking at like why these ideas are being discussed, and yet they're not being discussed. And then it's kind of like, okay, we're gonna throw this over here. We're gonna make this big monster up. But then over here, there's some other things that are taking place. It's very unfortunate. A lot of it, of course, is it is you know, political, you know, sportsmanship, if you will. But at the end of the day, it's their constituents that actually pay for all of this. Now, if you have constituents that don't care, that are very disrespectful, I mean, you know, there's flags up here in New York that say, you know, F Biden. I'm sitting around, and these are like decent neighborhoods. And I'm saying to myself, your kids are, you have kids who are walking down these streets, but this is what you have hanging on the front of your home. Mm. So it just speaks volumes to where the mindset of many of these people are. Now, let me just say this. You talk about politicians. We know that there are several senators, there have been several congressmen and women that have been extremely disrespectful. Mm. Now, you can be a Republican, you can be a Democrat, you can be a Libertarian, but it doesn't mean that you have to extend or hide behind your racism. At the end of the day, it's about taking care of your constituency, if that is what you actually got elected to do, and if that's what you went into that for. We don't know everybody's reasons, but I will say this, the level of disrespect and dismissiveness, I'm in my 50s. What I'm witnessing now, it must be the same thing that it was like during the McCarthy era. There was such a level of disrespect in terms of, you know, demonizing individuals and just disrespecting, it mm-hmm. makes absolutely no sense. So then the question becomes, what is it that you, at the end of the day, mm-hmm. want to have done? And again, pivoting back to this whole idea of critical race theory, this would be an opportunity to look at those particular senators and, you know, congressmen and congresswomen and understand what wellspring are they coming from? And this is why the idea of critical race theory is actually needed. Mm-hmm. Bottom line in this story. So, you know, again, the whole political piece, you know, we can't change people's minds. It's very unfortunate. We can't change constituents' minds. Individuals have to open themselves up. They have to read. And again, everybody's not going to agree. However, when it comes to like history, when it comes to the mathematics and the sciences and what have you, there is no in between. Pure mm-hmm. mathematics, 1 + 1 = 2. And at the end of the day, either we're going to be a country that moves forward or we're going to be a country that gets stuck in the quagmire. Mm-hmm. And while we have made many, many strides, if you will, we're still caught up and we can do a heck of a lot better.
Mm-hmm. You know, the human mind is so, let me put it this way. Anytime you try to take something away from somebody or deny somebody something, or let's say deny education, or you talk about the term woke. I looked it up, and that came in the 1960s, folks. But we're hearing about it in 2023. So you have to ask yourself why. And you talk about the banning of books out there in certain states, especially Florida. And when you start taking things away from people, there's a curiosity factor that kicks in. There's a curiosity factor that kicks in. As children, your mom said, well, don't do this. You say, well, whoa, why is that? And Mr. Mitchell, I want you to comment on this. Do you think at some point in time, and this is just a gut feeling of mine, that I think this is going to come back to bite them? Because they're trying to demonize something that shouldn't be demonized. They're trying to deny and keep education and information away from people. And like I said, we're curious about things. And I want critical race theory, woke. Well, let me look and see what that actually is. Do you think at some point in time that could come back to bite them or backfire?
I think there's a potential for that to happen, particularly if you start looking at, let's say, what might happen with how books are written or what's not put in books. Their children might come back and say, hey, this is not the truth. I mean, there have been books that have been written, let's say, prior to 2023 that have particular specificities in them. But then moving forward, because we know that Texas, you know, that's the state that looks at all the textbooks, if you will, to make sure that, you know, it has what they want in it that gets sent around the country. Yeah, it may come back to bite them. You know, their children might say, hey, you didn't tell us the truth. And that would be horrible. You know, and again, as intense and as heinous as things that have happened in this country, have been, we've always, when I say we, I'm talking about this country. At a point in time, those truths and that knowledge has always been put out there.
Mm-hmm.
As you make that statement, you know, I'm thinking about a book. It's called Redefining Rufus, and it was about the sexual abuse of black men during slavery.
Mm.
Unfortunately, that book can't be 100 pages, but it took me about 4 months to actually read because of the intensity of what was on each page. Mm. And while it was hard to read, it was needed to be read. The same thing with the book that's called Without Sanctuary, which discussed the history of lynching in this country. I did not like looking at those pictures, but I needed to see those pictures to understand the how and why in terms of where how we got to this moment in time. That we cannot turn away from that, and nor can we, you know, dismiss it, nor can we reduce it. We must look at it head on and deal with what that blemish happens to be. And it's more than just saying, you know, this is a stain on America and this and this, that and the other. What I've come to realize is that as I, you know, sit before all of you on this particular panel, my life, our lives have been surrounded with this madness, but yet we seek to do better and evolve. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that those who don't understand what critical race theory happens to be or what being woke is all about don't want that truth. They don't want that reality to be shared. And sometimes we have to look in the mirror. And yes, we do have ancestors, those that were enslaved, those that lynched, and those that, you know, that unfortunately did the lynching. And we have to be very honest about that if we're going to be able to move forward as a country. And without that truth, without being honest, we will continue to be at each other's throats. And unfortunately, television and the internet has been utilized to literally use these words, to use this, these what now have become like buzzwords or dog whistles to move people in its most negative way, form, and fashion. And that's not what we need right now.
You know, the danger, I saw something, and I believe this happened in Florida also. Do I mean to pick on Florida? Yeah. Texas, all of them.
You need to be picked on.
Tell me about it.
Picking on everybody else.
There were there are three versions of the Rosa Parks story that came out of Florida. Three versions. Well, my holy folks, there's only one truth. So you got the real one, and then you've got the slightly watered down, then the completely watered down version of the particular story. Now, growing up, we all know what happened or we, what we're told. But the dangers, I want you to talk about the dangers of watering down or changing history and not revealing real history. What are the dangers that we're facing when that happens, Mr. Mitchell?
We're doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't say it any better. Yeah, we would be doomed.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, again, we could be so much further, but right now you're looking at a rewriting of history, mm-hmm. and that cannot be done. It just simply cannot be done. We have scholars who have done the work, and regardless of what their political position might be, they've done the work, and you know, when it gets to the academy, you know, it can be criticized, and you know, we can be critical of the information, if you will, if it doesn't pass muster. But I do believe that this will hinder this country.
Mm-hmm.
If you get to the point where you have a lot of books that are being written, particularly from a scholastic perspective, when you start dealing with collegiate and graduate level engagement, that would be a travesty, and this country would be in a world of hurt if that were to take place, based upon what you just asked.
Absolutely. Mike?
I have a question. Oh.
No, you have a question? Go, Dr. Sims, then we'll go to Mike.
Yes, I have a question. You use the word control, and people fear what they can't control. People fear what they don't understand. Down through my years folks teaching and me teaching, when people understand who they are, they become powerful. When they become proud of who they are, they become people who are unstoppable. And I'm feeling that in this critical race theory era, where you have the politicians, we talk about the White House and what have you, I believe their world is unraveling, because there is a people who wants to know, especially this young generation, who wants to know what is real. And so I'm like, I don't get it. Why would they want to withhold our significance? Because let me tell you something. When I found out how involved my people were with the creative of various products and you know, areas that enhance this United States alone, that gave me a sense of pride. And what I believe that they want to strip from us is the pride from us. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're still on, but
I hear you.
Okay. I just see a blank screen. I'm sorry. But it gives us a sense of pride, what I'm saying.
Yes.
And I believe that they have stripped that. When you're talking about the men, and I did a research on that too. It's very graphic. And it just demoralized us as humans, mm-hmm. and made us feel very insignificant. And that's a hard pill for some to swallow, mm-hmm. the truth. Because there's some walking around, four of my white brothers and sisters, who said that really didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Okay? But we have some people still living who says it did happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so I believe people, when facing the truth, bothers them tremendously, mm-hmm. to the point they would rather believe a lie than the truth. Mm-hmm. So that gives them a sense of power, that they're in control of their own thought process, their own lives. They don't have to face it. So why bring up my listening to various of my white brothers and sisters, they said, why bring this up now? Why even talk about this? This is old history. But it's not old history.
It's okay to bring up the Holocaust every year.
I'm gonna be me, y'all. I'm gonna be Cecilia today, because my thing is this, is that you want to keep something hidden from me, mm-hmm. but yes, you blast everybody else and make them mm-hmm. above me. You want to take away my color, my involvement, even over in Israel. I know I'm going way over. They want to make everything, and Mike, I love you, sweetheart. It is what it is. And I know you don't have that thought process, but many of our predecessors out in the world, they're taking away our identity even, mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. being creative, or even making a mark in history, even in foreign countries. My thing is, what the hatred is so real, okay, that down to the core, that you would want to continue to dehumanize me, okay? Mm-hmm. You want to continue to make me insignificant. Why? I believe, and you can correct me, what do I call you, Mr. Mitchell? Dr. Mitchell? Okay. All right. To dehumanize me, to make me feel like my worth was very minute. Mm. All I was good for is the tenure fields.
Right.
Okay. To tenure fields. And see, they don't like this kind of talk, but it is real. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay for me to nurse your babies. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay for me to raise your babies, but I wasn't good enough to sit in your restaurants. Mm-hmm. And we're having some of the same kind of issues. It's just not broadcasted. That's all. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, we're moving forward, but I believe we have a people. I think what I'm trying to get to is how do we get to our people and make them wake up and know their value? I know we sit around and talk about it, but I think that they've been so enamored by being beat down mentally and feeling like they're worthless. How do we really, because I feel like just shaking them. And tell me, really, if you would look at your history and see what you've done, okay? Mm-hmm. Your forefathers have done. You should walk with your head up with pride,
right?
You know? And so what do we do? Because I get frustrated. Now, another thing I really believe, and how do you feel about this, Mr. Mitchell? I think parents are going to have to take their homes back and start teaching their children the real, what's mm-hmm. really going on. Teaching them the real history as it is and as graphic as it is. Okay. So how do you feel about that? I know I said a bunch and anyway.
if I forget something, just remind me if I don't answer the question.
Yes, right there.
But I want to touch on parents teaching at home. And I also want to touch on what you were saying about us being demonized. And there was an issue when Kevin Hart went to Egypt and said something about the Great Pyramid, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yes.
Then I don't know if this gentleman was a comic or if he was someone that he did pick up. However, being said, with all
you're breaking respect, up.
With all due respect to that part of the world, Egypt is on the continent of Africa.
Thank you.
And these were people of African descent that actually built the pyramids. Now that's nothing to have that's nothing to even have a conversation about, right?
Right.
Because this has already been
saying the white man built them. They're saying now the white man built them.
So in that instance, well, at least in this particular, and I was watching the news. Again, I'm not sure if he was a comic or someone with the Egyptian Museum of Antiquities. I'm not sure, but I think to try to take the contribution away from the people that actually did it is extremely problematic.
Right.
When you understand that those who are in that part of the world now came in as conquerors and we understand the history, that's extremely important to understand. Mm-hmm. And you can't just say because we're there, we were the ones that did it. Because when you look on inside those temples, and I've been there, they are black and brown bodies. No mm-hmm. disrespect to anybody else. That just happens to be a fact.
Yes.
So in that instance, you know, we're talking about the Great Pyramid. Hell, the Great Pyramid is on the back of the dollar bill. So clearly there's some level of importance.
Exactly.
And it has to be understood in